Great, well, thank you very much. So today I'm going to talk about excess expenditures, excess informal care days, and quality of life decrements associated with self-reported visual impairment and blindness. And those are the disclosures. So what we want to talk about is, what do we mean by burden of disease? There are multiple definitions that different groups have used over time by what's meant by burden of disease, and several years back there was enough of a disagreement between some work that I was involved in, which our mutual colleague David Ryan was also involved in, and work that had been done in Australia that, you know, came up with a bigger number for Australia's burden of blindness than the U.S. burden of blindness, and everybody got concerned about what was being counted. I think one of the first things to start off is, what do we mean by burden of disease and what's being included in a particular study? And recognizing that there are very big definitions of burden of disease and there's much more narrow definitions. And the questions that I answered this morning are a narrow piece of the overall potential measure that you might come up with. Talk about the data used to produce the estimate, because this is a follow-up to some work that was published about 5 years ago now, and then working again with David Ryan when he was at RTI, came up with an overall estimate that was then used by Prevent Blindness in America to produce a nice symposium about the topic. And one of the questions is, have the numbers changed very much, or can we just update for inflation? So the methods used to produce the estimates, the results of the analysis, and then what comes next in light of this new data that we have, and in light of the ongoing questions about how big is the burden, what can we do about the burden, and is it cost-effective to intervene and change the burden? So the burden of disease definition is the economic impact from a condition in a year. It's important to separate out what we mean by burden of disease versus cost of illness. You hear the two terms when you look at economic papers in the literature, and sometimes they're used interchangeably. There are technical aspects of the definition that separate the two. Cost of illness is often used to refer to, once a person becomes blind, what's the extra cost they're going to experience for the rest of their lives? And so we could ask, for all the people who become blind in 2012, what's the excess costs they're going to experience for the remainder of their lives. Whereas the burden of disease says, in 2012, all the people who are blind, what's the excess cost they are bringing to the economy in a given year, recognizing that it's not just excess costs and that there are plenty of, you know, productive and good things that people who are blind can bring to the economy as well. But in this case, we're specifically looking at excess medical care costs that they're experiencing over a one-year time period, regardless of whether they have just become blind or became blind a very long time ago. In terms of economic impact, there's three aspects of it that I am looking at with the data that we have available. One is medical care, and it's important to distinguish between medical care that people use because they have an eye disease and they're trying to prevent becoming blind, which is one question, and again, work is more easily done with often with claims data. And medical care question that I'm asking, which is, once a person self-reports in a survey data set that they are have a vision problem or that they are blind, how much extra medical care expenditures do they have in a year, and what are they made up of? And we find some interesting things about what they're made up of. Informal care is care provided without pay. It can be provided by family, it can be provided by friends, it can be provided by neighbors. One of the interesting things about this particular data source is how it asks about informal care, and I'll give you the detail on that to understand why the estimate of informal care in this particular work is probably an underestimate. And then also an impact on quality of life, although if we're going to talk about the economic burden of the impact on quality of life, we also need to motivate how we assign a dollar value to that, which there is a motivation for, but it's not 100% agreed upon what the number should be, but I have a number, and at least you can follow the logic with the number that I'm using. So the conditions that we're interested in are low vision or vision problems and blindness. And the data is from the Medical Expenditure Panel Survey. We've seen it referenced several times in the presentations from the vision care section over the past couple of days. The Medical Expenditure Panel Survey, just a few extra details for people who aren't familiar with it. It's an overlapping panel design with each person who is surveyed in it for 2 years if they participate the entire time. And it's actually sort of a little, it's more like 30-month time period from which the data are constructed to allow for two calendar year estimates of what's a person's medical care expenditures in, you know, two adjacent calendar years. It can be used as cross-sectional, it can be used as pooled cross-sectional, Most people have generally used it as cross-sectional or looking for changes where the changes are meaningful in a one-year time period. It's one of these surveys with a complex sampling design and weights, and the weights can be used to make it nationally representative. Although one of the things that's often cautioned is that it should be considered nationally representative of things like average expenditures or differences in expenditures, but shouldn't necessarily be considered nationally representative for estimating prevalence of diseases. There's some debate as to whether or not it could be a good measure of prevalence, but what I've done is taken estimates of the excess medical care expenditures from this data set, but my prevalence estimates from other data. And it allows for the estimation then of excess medical care expenditures, excess informal care quantities, and then we have to assign a dollar value to those, and differences in quality of life, again, which we then have to figure out how to assign a monetary value to come up with an overall number that we can compare to the number of about $15 billion that was published 5 years ago for these three. So previous work used data from 1996 to 2002. The current work used data from 2003 to 2009. There's another set of analyses which ask the interesting question, is there any reason or do we see any evidence that the fundamental relationships changed between the earlier time period and the later time period? But that's not what I'm presenting today. And my student who did these analyses adjusted all of the costs from whatever year they were measured in up to 2011, using inflation adjustments so that they could be compared in a more meaningful way. Data for the national estimates, again, I use prevalence figures from elsewhere. The Prevent Blindness America has good epidemiological data, and they have a very recent, actually, update to the prevalence figures on a state-by-state and national level that can be very useful for trying to project what the costs are at the national level once you have a per-person estimate from the analyses that I've done. So methods that were used, regression analysis, similar to previous work. There's a whole variety of different ways that you can approach the regression analysis. This was a straightforward one to make it as comparable as possible to the previous work, linear regression. That's despite the fact that there are lots of people who have zero costs. There's some extra steps that can be taken to account for that methodologically, and that would be some interesting future work, but again, to make it as comparable as possible to what was published before, we simply used a linear regression and applied the techniques that you need to in a regression analysis to make sure that you're accounting for the complex survey approach. And so using the weights and using the data about the strata that were being sampled. So the dependent variables, first one was looking at total medical care expenditures. That's a variable that's available for each person in the medical expenditure panel survey for each year that they are in the survey. And then they also provide information so that you can look at subsets of medical care expenditures. You can look at subsets by the category of expenditures. You can also look at subsets by who is paying. So out-of-pocket costs, Medicare reimbursed costs, Medicaid reimbursed costs, private insurer reimbursed costs. And the categories of expenditures are things like how much is being paid for hospital care, how much is being paid for emergency room care, and a variety of other categories like that. We are also looking at the number of days of informal care provided by individuals who are outside the household, and it should be who live outside the household. We have to assign a dollar value to that, and again, this is a limitation of the medical expenditure panel survey. The way that the survey asks about informal care, it asks specifically about care that's being provided by people who don't live in the same household. Now, there can be plenty of informal care provided by people who do live in the same household. It may be difficult in some cases to figure out what's extra care and what would the person have been doing anyway in some sense. And so they stick with just care provided by people who live outside the household, and that's a limitation, and we recognize that it means that it's probably being undercounted. And then quality of life measure translated into quality adjusted life here is an associated dollar value, and I'll explain what we did with that. So categories of expenditures and who is paying. One that we were very interested in because in previous work we found that among people who are already blind or have visual impairments, Home health care agency costs were actually a big difference between the group that was blind or visually impaired and the group with normal vision. And that wasn't something I had necessarily expected going into the work that we had done about 5 years ago. So we wanted to look back at that. We wanted to look at prescriptions, although again, maybe by the time someone is significantly visually impaired, the prescription difference won't be as important. And it's also interesting to ask, are they experiencing different out-of-pocket expenses? Because people who have low vision or who are blind are often making lower income, and so higher out-of-pocket expenses might actually be quite important for this population. So how did we apply a value to the days of informal care once we found a difference? You can go to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which is a governmental agency. You can go to the website, and you can look up average hourly pay for certain types of workers. There is a category called home health worker. The average hourly pay for that group was $9.70. And you can assume that each day of informal care is 8 hours. Again, we just have to make some sort of assumption just to standardize it, and this matches what we had done the last time around. Quality-adjusted life years. So as a generic concept, quality-adjusted life years are important because they combine measures of different types of morbidity and mortality all into one metric. And so it's very useful for conditions like vision impairment and blindness, where maybe it has an effect on your mobility, and maybe it has an effect on your ability to do usual activities, and maybe it has an effect on your depression or anxiety level, and it could affect other parts of quality of life as well. So we need one measure that summarizes the different types of effects on quality of life. We haven't taken anything about mortality into consideration in these calculations. It's just asking, you know, from a pure, we have a quality of life measure, and given this measure, what does it tell us about differences between the population who self-reports as visually impaired or blind and the population that doesn't? There were a few years in the early days of the medical expenditure panel survey when they actually asked questions using a health utility instrument, which the SF-12 is not historically, and that was very straightforward to translate into quality adjusted life years. There are some algorithms these days where you can take the SF-12, which is mostly a functional measure, translate it into a health utility measure, and then use that to talk about differences in quality adjusted life years between the visually impaired population and the normal sighted population. And then we don't have a single figure that everybody agrees this is what a quality adjusted life year is worth in the United States, but if you look in the literature, the figure of $50,000 per quality adjusted life year is the most commonly cited figure in the cost-effectiveness literature at this point in time. We used it last time, again, to make the estimates as comparable as possible. We use it again. So what do we use for our independent variable? Low vision and blindness identified by self-report. It's one question. The person can indicate that with contacts or glasses, if necessary, they have no problem seeing. They have problems seeing either newsprint, faces across the street, or both, but they're not legally blind, and then they can indicate that they're legally blind. So it's a self-reported data, recognizing the limitations there, but it was what we used before, and we were able to use it again. The middle three groups are grouped together as low vision or visual impairment. And there are other potential confounders to control for. You'll see how big a difference controlling for the confounders makes in the estimate between sort of the unadjusted difference in medical care expenditures and then the adjusted difference in medical care expenditures. And we wanted to make sure not to sort of overly saturate the model, but we did want to control for at least two other health conditions which can be precursors to different reasons for visual impairment. High blood pressure systemically is sometimes associated with high intraocular pressure, which is then associated with glaucoma, and diabetes, of course, is associated with diabetic retinopathy, and we want to make sure that to the degree that the blindness is caused by diabetic retinopathy, we're not picking up the excess medical care expenditures due to diabetes in general, but just due to the vision impairments that individuals have. So what did we find? So if we just take simple averages, you know, we look at the people who are self-reporting as blind, the people who self-report as having vision impairment, and the people who self-report as no vision problem, and we use the people with no vision problem as our sort of reference group, we find that with no regression adjustment, the people with low vision or vision impairment experience $3,800 extra dollars in medical care expenditures each year, and the blind individual experienced over $8,000 in excess medical care expenditures. But part of that could be because they're older, have extra comorbidities, variety of conditions. So when we control for that list of confounders that I showed, the difference for low vision goes all the way down to $600, and the difference for blindness then goes down to $2,800. And the regression-adjusted numbers are what we use to make our projections at the national level. Just a few interesting things for pharmaceutical costs. People with low vision are spending an extra about $150. People who self-report as blind spend an extra almost $600, although that was not statistically significant in the regression analysis. Home health care agency costs, again, that was a big aspect of our previous analysis. You see that the people with low vision spend about $140 extra, and the people who self-report as blind spend a little over $600 extra. So it's interesting to look at whether we find these similarly to what we found last time. It's also interesting that the excess pharmacy cost and the excess home health care agency costs for both groups are very comparable in terms of their magnitude. Excess out-of-pocket costs, for low vision, it's actually $150 a year. Again, depending on how tight your income is, that $150 might actually be a big deal to some people in who are in the study. And then blindness actually doesn't spend that much, as much more out-of-pocket. I should have pointed out earlier, this is sort of the 40 and older population, which is nicely complementary to the next presentation, and then maybe because there are extra benefits, social benefits, for people who are blind, which don't necessarily accrue to people who have low vision. And so people who are blind may be eligible for more benefits, which would limit their extra out-of-pocket costs, because certainly their overall extra costs, as we saw on the earlier slide, were much higher. Per person, excess days of informal care, just about one day per year. Again, I think this is a serious underestimate, probably because of focusing only on those who live outside the household. And then difference in terms of health utility, and this is skipping a few steps in terms of showing how to go from the SF-12 to a health utility measure, but people with low vision experience, and this is on a scale where 0 is death and 1 is perfect health, low vision experiences a difference of about 0.05, and blindness experiences a difference of about 0.07, and those are comparable to what we found last time. Much different than what you find in terms of a health utility loss if you ask people who are sighted, how would you feel if you were blind? Because those estimates are more like 0.4 on this 0 to 1 scale. But this is comparable to, if slightly smaller than, what we found last time. So trying to turn this into then a national projection using the prevalence data from Prevent Blindness America and the current estimates from the more recent medical expenditure panel survey data. This breaks it down by the different types of costs, low vision, blindness, and total. So you can see that it's about $5 billion a year of excess medical care expenditures for people who are low vision or blind compared to normally sighted. Less than $1 billion in formal care. Adding those two up, you get closer to $6 billion. The quality of life figure is actually the largest, and that's consistent with what we found last time, for a total of nearly $17 billion. Which isn't too far off from what we would have gotten if we had simply done the inflation adjustment. But it's important to do the analysis because we didn't know whether the differences would have emerged or not. And that's the end of my presentation. Thank you.